Chakshur, Unmilitam Yenitas Bai Shigarvay Maha.
So we're very happy to be here in the Radhadamodar Temple, celebrating Vaishnava Diksha. So tonight we're going to talk about Vaishnava Diksha. Of course, there's two types of Diksha or initiation being given. One type is the Hari Nam Diksha, and the other one is the Gayatri Mantra or Brahman Diksha. And so it's very important to understand before we discuss initiation in specific the three basic paths that there are in the Vedic literatures. This is a little educational for everybody. There's three basic paths. One is called the Vedic path. The other one is called Pancharatriki Vidhi. And the third is called Bhagavat Vidhi. Three different paths. So we'll describe them. The Vedic path, of course, is not the path that we're following right now, because Vedic refers to the original Vedic literatures and the ritualistic brahmanas who performed the rituals coming from the original Vedic literatures, like the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, and Yajur Veda. In fact, you even have a group here in Fiji that proclaims, it's interesting, they proclaim they only follow the four Vedas. Should I mention the name of the group? I guess I could mention. They're called the Arya Samaj, which is really interesting. And they say they don't accept what's called the Itihasa and the Puranas. That means the histories. And Puranas, of course, is more than history. Purana means something describing the creation of the universe, the destruction of the universe, ultimate liberation, many different topics. So, unfortunately for them, they don't understand what the original four Vedas say. In the Sama Veda, it is stated in the Chandogya portion of the Sama Veda, it's a little intellectual for all of you. But in the Chandogya portion of the Samaveda, it states, Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite. In other words, the original four Vedas state that the Puranas and histories such as the Mahabharata and Ramayana are actually part of the Vedas. So when someone says they just follow the four Vedas and they don't follow the Puranas or the Itihasas, then they're not actually following the four Vedas, because the four Vedas say to follow the Puranas and Itihasas. Very interesting. So next time you meet someone from the Arya Samaj, you can present them for that argument. They said, you know what the four Vedas say. And also, in the Rig Veda, it says, Om Tad Vishnu Paramampada Pashanti Yat Suryaha. That all the demigods, they're worshipping Vishnu. So, anyway, so that's one path, the Vedic path, which is generally a ritualistic path dealing with what we call karma kanja practices. Karma kanja practices are meant to elevate one materially, ultimately going to the heavenly planets, and then when one's good karma runs out, coming back to earth, and then again performing karma kanja rituals so you go back to the heavenly planets. So this is not very much recommended. And of course, in this day and age, the primary process is Bhagavat Vidhi. Bhagavat Vidhi is the chanting of the Lord's names, the hearing of Krishna Katha, such as Bhagavad Gita, such as the Srimad Bhagavatam, the preaching of Krishna consciousness, Harinam, Sankirtan. This is Bhagavat Vidhi. So we follow primarily Bhagavat Vidhi. Although we also follow Pancharatriki Vidhi. Pancharatriki Vidhi means the system of temple worship. So both were followed. Srila Prabhupada stated that our Krishna consciousness movement moves on two tracks. Like a train has two tracks. And those two tracks are the Bhagavat Vidhi, preaching, hearing, chanting, Krishna's pastimes, and the deity worship. Both are essential, and I'm going to describe why both are essential. Even though of the two, Bhagavad Vidhi is more important. Well, let me describe first of all why Bhagavad Vidhi is important, because that's the Yuga Dharma. In every day and age, in every yuga, there's a different specific dharma to be performed. In the Satya Yuga, it was meditation. In the Treta Yuga, it was opulent sacrifices. Not like the sacrifice we're seeing today. This is a very simple sacrifice. This sacrifice here today has a little bit of ghee, a few bananas, and a few pieces of fruit. But in these sacrifices, in the Treta Yuga, there were mountains of gold. And so much gold was given to the brahmanas after the sacrifice, the brahmanas could not even carry away all the gold. You even had Arjuna, that's why Arjuna is called Dhananjaya. That means he who collects wealth. Because Arjuna sometimes had to arrange for Yudhisthira Maharaj to perform a sacrifice, and so Arjuna had to go where the brahmanas left all their gold. Now today there's not so much gold, and it's very expensive. So you can't have these big sacrifices. And ghee is very expensive. You were having to import ghee from New Zealand. In the old days, the brahmanas did not import ghee from New Zealand. They had plenty of kamadhenus. That means cows who gave unlimited quantity of milk, ghee, ice cream, butter, anything you wanted. So, anyway, that's Treta Yuga. And then on Dwapara Yuga, the primary system of self-realization is the temple worship. But in Kali Yuga, the primary system is Harinam Sankirtan. Kaler Dosha Nadhe Rajan Asteko Mahadguna Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukti Sangha Parambajet. The statement is, in Kali Yuga, there is a lot of difficulty. As we see in this world, there is so much crime. People are less intelligent. People are getting sick, even in a young age. We hear about people getting heart attacks when they're 35, even in their 20s. And so it's an ocean of difficulty. Kaler dosha nidhei rajan. But asyeko mahadgunam. There is one good quality that actually more than overbalances the bad qualities in Kali Yuga, and that is Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya. Mukta Sangha Parambajet. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you can go back to Godhead. So then, one may question, okay, we talked about Bhagavad Vidhi. So one may question, why do we need Pancharatriki Vidhi? Why do we need deity worship? Well, there's several reasons. One reason is that in order to chant the holy names properly, we have to be situated in goodness. And without worshiping the form of the Lord, the deity worship, passion will naturally engulf our consciousness. Just like many of you are interested in seeing pictures of beautiful or handsome people. Even here in Fiji, you have this newspaper called the Fiji Sun, right? It actually should be called the Fiji Rahu instead of the Fiji Sun. I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody. Anyway, and there's whole sections of Bollywood stars in it. And you were all watching the Bollywood movies. Not all of you, of course. Some of you are watching the Bollywood movies, appreciating the physical beauty of the stars, which is actually only skin deep. Because the stars have to get old like all of us, and then what was originally beautiful becomes wrinkled. So instead of appreciating or meditating on the beauty of some temporary material body, we meditate on Krishna's beauty. In fact, one great acharya, Srila Rupa Goswami, said, if you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see Krishna standing on the bank of the Jamuna, the Keshi Ghat, because then you lose that desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love. So deity worship is essential so that we come in contact and meditate on the personal form of the Lord. If we didn't do deity worship, we would be inclined towards impersonalism. When you see the personal form of Krishna, the beautiful form of the deity, the beautiful form of Radha Damodar, your mind is automatically drawn. Just like there's an interesting story about Sripad Ramanujacharya. Sripad Ramanujacharya was walking on the beach one day. And as he was walking on the beach, there was a man with his girlfriend. And the man was fanning his girlfriend with a chamara, like we use for the deities. And he was holding an umbrella over his girlfriend's head and walking backwards so he could see her the whole time. And so he was worshiping her just like we worship Radha Damodar. Interesting, isn't it? And so Sripad Ramanujacharya, who is the head of the Sri Sampradaya, he asked this man, "Why are you doing this?" And the man said, "My girlfriend's eyes are so beautiful, I can't keep my eyes off of her." And Sripad Ramanujacharya said, "All right, what if I show you someone with more beautiful eyes?" And he said, "Yes." He was thinking of being another girl. He was an illusion. So what happened is that night he took him to see the deity. And that deity is in Srirangam, Lord Ranganath. And Lord Ranganath is very beautiful. He's lying down. I don't know if anyone here has been to Srirangam. And so when this person, his name was Dhanurdhar actually, when he saw the deity, he became so amazed that he became attracted to the deity, and he no longer thought his girlfriend was the most attractive. It's an interesting story. Of course, later on he married his girlfriend and did his dharma as a nice householder. Very good. So, that's the one of the main reasons for deity worship. Also, it regulates us. Without deity worship, without pancharashriki vidhi, we become unregulated. In other words, we would wake up any time in the morning. We would wake up at 7, 8 o'clock, eat our prasadam, go to work, whatever we do. But with the deity worship, it forces us to wake up early in the morning because we are not yet on the platform of spontaneous devotional service. In the beginning, we perform devotional service that is called Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means we follow the rules and regulations very strictly. Later on, then you become more spontaneous and do it automatically. But in the beginning, we have the deity worship regulates us to become brahminical, to cultivate the mode of goodness. And then we're able to hear our rounds more. We're able to appreciate Krishna Katha more. So that is why the deity worship is essential. And it's directly Krishna. We are worshipping the deities, but the deity is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sakshad, Rajendra, Nandana. We should always keep this in mind, that Krishna is there on the altar. We are seeing Krishna every day. We are so fortunate by the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to see Krishna every day. This is the greatest mercy. And the service that you were offered in the temple is the greatest mercy that's being offered to you. You should rush to do service to Radha Damodar. It's an opportunity. It is not simply a duty. It is an opportunity that is being offered to the devotees. And every devotee who has taken initiation is required to take that opportunity so you can make spiritual advancement. And if you don't take that opportunity, what will happen is your life will be miserable, you will get depression, you will have so many problems. So you want to be happy? You worship the deity. Okay. So, these are the two paths that we follow. Pancharatriki vidhi and Bhagavat vidhi. Another point about the Vedic system is in order to follow that system, you have to be a Brahmin by birth. And in Kali Yuga, no one's a Brahmin by birth. Kalo Sudra Sambhava. The Bhagavatam tells us in Kali Yuga, everybody's a Shudra by birth, no matter what their name is. They could be Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Panchavedi, Dasavedi. It doesn't matter. Everybody in Kali Yuga is Shudra by birth. And only by the proper samskara, bhavet dvijam, can one actually become dvija, or twice born. That's what a Brahmin is. That's the name for Brahman is Dvija, which means he's taking a second birth. First birth is like an animal birth. Second birth is human birth, spiritual birth. Actually, the word in Sanskrit, Dvija, also means bird. And the reason Dvija means bird, Dvijayate, that means two births, is because a bird is born twice, right? Once the egg comes out of the mother, and the second time the egg hatches. So a Brahmin, of course, is not born from an egg, but a Brahmin is born twice. Once from mother and father, and the spiritual birth from spiritual master. And that is actually the human birth. Most important birth. So, today we are giving both types of initiation. We're giving Pantratriki initiation, which is the Gayatri initiation, and we are giving the Bhagavadvidhi initiation, which is the first initiation, or Harinam initiation. In order to go back to Godhead, actually all you need is Harinam. But the Brahman Gayatri initiation helps one with the Harinam and helps one render service to Srila Prabhupada's movement. This temple is Srila Prabhupada's temple, and you are rendering service directly to Srila Prabhupada when you render service to the deities here, to the devotees, even cleaning the floor. It's described that all aspects of the temple are expansions of Baladev. So you clean the floor, it is the same as dressing the deities. So we should be always enthusiastic to do some service in the temple here. Very important. Those of you taking initiation, it is absolutely required. 100% required. Someone's crying. They don't like initiation. So, I know. So, anyway, so let's talk a little bit about what initiation entails. I mean, the procedure, what we mean by it, now that we've defined what first and second initiation is, or Bhagavadvidhi and Pantratrikividhi. Let's start with Bhagavadvidhi, the chanting of the Lord's holy names. We should understand that the reason the chanting of the holy names is emphasized, is important, is that Krishna is 100% there in his holy names. Namachintamani, Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Purna Shura Nitya Mukto Vinatvam Namanamino. The statement is that the holy name of Krishna is like a touchstone. And is the form of Krishna. Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Krishna Rasa Vigraha. Purna, it is complete. Shura, it is pure. Nitya Mukto, it is eternally liberated. And it is Vinatvam Namanamino. It is non-different from Krishna. So when you're chanting, you're with Krishna. It is more important to hear Krishna than to contact Krishna through any other sense. Because in the, especially the age of Kali, the methodology of seeing Krishna is through the ears. It's called mantra murti. The statement is there in Bhagavatam. It's an interesting statement. Mantra murti. That means the murti, or the form of the mantra. And so Krishna is there in his holy names. And if we properly reciprocate with his holy names, then we will see him with our spiritual eyes. So what does it mean to properly reciprocate with the holy name? Basically it means to avoid certain things and to do certain positive things. First of all, you avoid what Prabhupada would call, and what the Acharyas call, the 10 offenses on chanting. And it's very important for the devotees to memorize this list of offenses so that they can identify when their mind is not properly situated, or when their actions are not properly situated, or when their speaking is not properly situated. So I'm going to mention the 10 offenses, which Srila Prabhupada would always mention at the time of initiation. First offense is to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. So the reason this is offensive is that Krishna says in the Bhagavatam, sarva riyam mayam sarunam riyam paham maranyat tena janati naham tebyo managapi. He says, the devotees are in my heart, just like I am in the hearts of my devotees, the devotees are in my heart. So in other words, Krishna is always thinking of his devotee. He loves his devotee so much. Just like if you have a mother who loves her son or daughter so much, if you mistreat the son or daughter, the mother will get angrier than if she herself was mistreated, right? Because the love of a mother is the closest thing to love of God. We were speaking about this the other day, that if you go to a funeral and some young person has passed away, everyone is crying for themselves except for the mother. The mother is crying for the child because she cares for the child. Everyone else is thinking, what about me now that so-and-so is gone? But the mother is thinking, what about so-and-so? What about the child? So this is very nice. So you can equate the love a mother has for a child with the love that Krishna has for his devotee. And so if you even criticize or even think ill of Krishna's devotees, it's very dangerous. And as a result, you lose your taste for hearing and chanting. In fact, that offense is called the mad elephant offense, which means an elephant enters the garden. In this case, it's the garden of our devotional creeper. And the elephant tramples, destroys the plant. So that's the first offense that has to be avoided. Perhaps that's the most dangerous offense. Second offense is to consider demigods' names, names of the demigods, like Indra or Varuna or Shiva, to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. The demigods are all servants of Vishnu or Krishna. In fact, in general, their names are simply the name of a position. Like Indra means the greatest, or the greatest administrative demigod. Brahma also means the greatest too. So, and different people can become Indra. You could become Indra if you want. You could become Brahma if you want. You can't become Lord Shiva, but you can become Vayu. You become Mitra. You can become Surya. Any of these demigods. Would any of you like that? Be truthful. Yes, you probably would. Then you can control a lot. If you became Lord Brahma, the whole universe would be serving you. But you'd also have to execute austerities. So anyway, so Krishna, Ekala Ishvara Krishna. There's one Ishvara, his Ishvara controller, and that's Krishna. Anyway, so that's the second offense. Third offense is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master is speaking on behalf of the Supreme Lord, presenting the disciples' engagement in Krishna consciousness, presenting the Vedic literatures, and one should take his words very, very seriously. And of course, another point in ISKCON, we're all connected to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We have our initiating spiritual master, and we have a deep connection, all of us, with Srila Prabhupada. So we're meant to follow Srila Prabhupada's directions. The words of our spiritual master is representing Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada is our Siksha Guru too. And we follow his directions as elaborated in his books and his example when he was physically present with us. Therefore, it's required for each and every devotee to regularly hear and read about Prabhupada. This Prabhupada Lilamrita, the biography of Prabhupada, is absolutely essential for devotees. Because unless you hear about Prabhupada, how will you know Prabhupada? That's how you know someone. How do you know Krishna? Except by hearing about him. Even if you see someone, you don't know them unless you hear about them. Seeing doesn't give you that realization. I mean, I could see someone, I could look at someone all day long and I won't know anything about them. But if I hear from them and I hear about them, then I know a lot. So we should hear about Srila Prabhupada on a regular basis, especially his biographies. And so Prabhupada is our Shiksha Guru. Everyone's Shiksha Guru. That's what keeps the Hare Krishna movement together. We shouldn't form guru groupies or guru groups apart from Prabhupada's group. Yes, we may have our initiating spiritual master, but we're all the same family, all the same team. We don't want to discriminate. My guru is better than your guru. They're like little children will sometimes say, my father is better than your father. My mother is better than your mother. And finally, the two fathers end up fighting. You know, sometimes that happens like that. So we don't want to do that. We just want to have a unified movement following under Srila Prabhupada's guidance. And all the gurus in our movement are dedicated to that. And the gurus in our movement, we're all friends. Just like one of my friends is Veda Vyas Priyamaraj, a very good friend. And Bhakti Chuma Maharaj, these are some of the devotees who initiate here. And I would say all of them. Very good friends. I mean, we have friendship. We joke together. We go eat prasadam together. We assist each other. It's very nice. Our movement is very nice. Because we're all one cooperative team. Okay. So we don't want to disobey the order of the spiritual master. Next offense that we want to avoid is the blasphemy of Vedic literatures or literatures that are in the pursuance of the Vedic conclusion. In other words, we understand there's many Vedic literatures and some of them recommend preliminary things or things that are less important, but ultimately the purpose of the Vedas, according to Krishna and the Gita, is to know Krishna. But sometimes there's little baby steps in getting to know Krishna, and sometimes the absolute conclusion is presented, such as in the Bhagavad Gita. But we don't want to blaspheme or criticize any of the Vedic literatures. Next offense is to think the glories of chanting Hare Krishna are imagination. The next offense is to give some concocted, perverted interpretation about chanting rather than understanding it's directly Krishna. And the reason we're becoming purified is because we're in contact with the Supreme Pure. It's like Prabhupada said, if you come in contact with a fire, or if an iron rod comes in contact with fire, it becomes hot, hot, hotter, hotter, and finally becomes fire. So that's what's happening to us when we chant. Now, if you don't chant regularly, it's like the iron rod that's pulled out of the fire. It becomes cooler, 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 cooler. Finally, the iron rod is in Maya. Like us. You understand? So we have to constantly keep ourselves in the fire of Krishna consciousness. Regulated schedule. Waking up early. Chanting our rounds every day. Offering our food to Krishna before we eat it. Very important. If you don't offer your food, even if you're a vegetarian, you're eating sin, according to Krishna and the Gita. Everything must be offered with love and devotion. Not that you just treat Krishna like the checkout counter at the supermarket. You have to offer it with love and devotion. Krishna says that in the Gita. Atra pushpam pulam toyam yome bhakta prayachati, he says. Anyone who offers me leaf, fruit, a little water with love and devotion, I accept it. So, then the next offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. Now that you're taking initiation, you're vowing to follow the regulated principles. And these regular principles are very important because for several reasons. One reason is that when people break the regulated principles, Kali, the personality of this age that contaminates everybody and causes everyone to fight, Kali comes. Kali Yuga. Not the goddess Kali. Kali is a different pronunciation. Kali and Kali. Anyway. So then you're influenced by the age of Kali and you start to fight, you become unhappy, you become depressed, and so many things occur as a result of not following the four regular principles: no means misdirection, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. Very nice. So you should not think that just because you're chanting, you can do anything you want, because the chanting will alleviate you from the bad karma. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work. It's like sometimes in the Christian church, Catholic church, the people go and they do confession on Sunday. The rest of the week they do all sorts of nonsense. And then Sunday they say, God, forgive me. Next Sunday the same thing. Next Sunday the same thing. And after a while, God thinks, this guy's not so sincere. He says, forgive me, I'll never do it again, but he does it again. And again, and again. So that's sinning on the strength of chanting. It doesn't work like that. So we should follow strictly the four regulated principles. We're vowing to do that in front of the deities, Radha-Damodara. And when you make a promise in front of Krishna, it is very serious. If you lie in front of Krishna, it is extremely serious. In the old days, in the villages in India, when there was some dispute or argument between two people, they would go before the deities and they would have to tell the truth, because they were afraid of lying before the deities. So we should be afraid, because that's an offense, actually, to lie before the deities. And Krishna will punish us. Like a good mother or father, Krishna will punish us. So, therefore, we should not commit these sins. We're vowing never to commit them again. Basically, practically everybody was doing all sorts of sinful activities from the very beginning. Even here in Fiji, you were eating murgis, right? And your water vegetables were fish. You know, this is part of life. Or you were cutting the heads off of goats, offering it at the goddess Kali slaughterhouse. So this is very sinful, because when one, for example, meat eating, when you take a life, that's what will happen to you in the future. One thinks, I'm only buying the goat from MH Supermarket. Do they sell goats there? I'm sure they do. I'm buying it from there, but actually you're taking part in the killing. Anyone who takes part in the killing, transporting, cooking, serving, condoning, any of these different activities, they have the same karma as if you kill. Remember that. Transporting, serving, cooking, condoning means just allowing it to happen. Say, that's a good idea. That's condoning, not trying to get it to stop. Any of these things. And then killing. So we should stop our sinful activities and don't think that chanting will alleviate that. So next offense is to think that the chanting is like one of the rituals that are found in the Karmakanja section of the Vedas. Karmakanja means rituals to get you, well, just like you have Lakshmi Puja here, right? You have Pita Pak, Deva Pak, Sannyasi Pak. I don't know what else you have. Fiji Pak. You know, anyway. Because you have all these different rituals. Yeah, you know, where you put the black dot on the child's forehead to keep the evil eye away. Ooh. These are rituals. I mean, some of them may work and some of them may not. I'm not going to go through the list of them. But basically, the chanting is completely transcendental. Rituals may be there. Yes, it's necessary to have some rituals to make a society stable. Every society has rituals. Just like in Western society, when you meet someone, what do? Shake their hand. That's a ritual. I'm not saying that's bad. It's just part of the society. But it's not eternal. It's not the same as chanting. It's not that you can shake people's hand all day and expect it to have the same result of chanting Hare Krishna. Oh, music. Where's that music coming from? Someone's cell phone. Phone mode. Okay, thank you. So, anyway, so there's so many rituals. We don't equate them with chanting Hare Krishna. Chanting Hare Krishna is coming down, Golokera Prema Dhani, Purinam Sankirtan, coming right from the spiritual world. So when we chant, we should pay so much respect to Krishna's names. Okay, and the ninth offense is to instruct people who are faithless about the glories of the holy names. So either they will misuse the name or offend the name. We have to be very careful about how we explain. We want everyone to hear the chanting, but we don't need to explain unless someone is actually qualified to hear, especially the more intimate details about chanting. And then the tenth offense, and actually there's 11, but you know, we say the first 10. The tenth offense is to not have complete faith in the chanting and maintain material attachments. We should be seeking to gradually alleviate ourselves or to get rid of material attachments. Of course, the way we get rid of material attachments is by being attached to Krishna. You know, you look at the deities, you serve the deities, and then all of a sudden, you don't think of material things anymore. As soon as Krishna Surya Sama, Maya Hoy Andhakar. That, of course, is Bengali. Krishna is the sun, and wherever there is the sun, there's no darkness. Maya is the absence of the sun. That's the definition of Maya. The absence of light, the absence of the sun. What's the definition of dark? Dark is the absence of light. So Maya is the absence of Krishna. Krishna Surya Sama. Okay? And then finally, to sort of sum it up, there's like an 11th offense, which is to be inattentive while chanting. So all of us, we have to pay attention. Because if you don't pay attention, you'll be committing the other offenses. That's why it's considered, let's say, the offense that allows you or causes you to commit the other offenses. Because if you're attentive, you're going to be very careful. And you're not going to commit the other offenses. Okay? And so that's the negative side, what you have to avoid. And what you have to do is pray to Krishna while you're chanting. Beg Krishna while you're chanting. My godbrother, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, who passed away a number of years ago, he said you have to cry for Krishna while you're chanting. Prabhupada said a similar thing. You should chant in the mood of a child, crying for his mother or his or her mother. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he said about his temple, he said, we're opening up a crying factory here. You understand? Crying factory. Of course, normally we cry for something else. I didn't get enough prasadam. No one loves me. Thinking of other things to cry about. Oh, I have a pain in my leg. Oh, I'm in debt. So many things we cry about, isn't it? So, instead, we should cry for Krishna. Inanda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam. Vishame bhavambudo kripaya tapapada pankaja stitaduli sadrusham chintiyam. O son of Nanda Maharaj, I'm your eternal servant. But somehow or other I find myself in this horrible material world. Save me. Just like if you fall off a boat in the ocean, you're going to be crying. Save me, save me, save me. You're not going to just say it very softly. Oh, please save me. Isn't it? I mean, that would be kind of stupid. No one would hear you. You would say, save me, save me, save me. That's how you should chant. Not that loud, of course, because nobody else will be able to hear their chanting. But Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Krishna, save me from this material world. Fix me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Take me back to the spiritual world. You understand? That's the way you chant. And if you chant that way, very quickly you make spiritual advancement, and also you serve the mission. Very important part. Because if you just chant by yourself, it's called nirjana bhajana. That is not recommended. You have to engage in the sankirtan, which means to chant with many people and to serve Prabhupada's mission. Otherwise, you're simply bewildering, deluding yourself insofar as your spiritual advancement. You think you're advancing, but actually your mind is just meditating on different sense objects. So you have to serve the mission. Dedicate your life to serving this mission. Whether that means going out and preaching or deity worship or whatever. And working under the direction of the authorities in the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is not mundane. Prabhupada said this movement can be considered his transcendental body. So you do that, and you're assured success. So that's Bhagavad Vidhi. And then we'll talk for a few minutes about the Pancharatriki Vidhi initiation, which is called Gayatri initiation. And actually, to be able to chant mantras, you require to be initiated by a bhatra. You can't just like read the Vedic literature, pick out your own mantras, and then start chanting and expect success. The point is, sampradaya vinaye mantraste nishpala mataha, that your mantra must be given to you in the sampradaya, that means the cyclic succession, and ultimately by your spiritual master. And so the Gayatri mantras are like that. The Hare Krishna mantra is actually given out to everybody, but you still require first initiation or Harinam initiation. But Lord Chaitanya has gotten everybody to chant. Even if you chant without meaning it, you make some advancement. That's called Namavas chanting. That's Lord Chaitanya's special mercy. But the Gayatri mantra specifically must be given by the Guru, and one must be in the mode of goodness to be able to chant them properly. If you're not in the mode of goodness, you will not be able to experience the effect. So what is the mode of goodness? Well, let's describe three modes. Goodness, passion, ignorance. In the mode of ignorance, one is just lethargic, procrastinating, intoxicated, sleeping, not wanting to do anything, depressed. That's mode of ignorance. And the mode of passion, of unlimited desires. I want more and more and more. You're never satisfied. You want to control everyone. Ishwaraham. Just like it's described about Kshatriyas, Ishwaraham. One of the qualities of Kshatriyas is Ishwara Bhava. They get a lot of happiness out of controlling people. So that's the mode of passion. And then finally, you have the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, you're self-controlled. Let me describe the qualities of a Brahman in that respect. You're Sama. That means equal poise, equal in happiness and distress. Let's give the verse from the Bhagavad Gita. That matras parshas to kontiya sitoshna sukadugata agama payano nichas tamsa tikshasha bharata. Happiness, distress, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, winter and summer, you are exactly the same. You keep serving Krishna. That's sama. Sama. Of course, obviously, if it's winter, you put a coat on. You're not stupid. But you keep doing the same thing. You're not, don't get bewildered by anything. And Dhamma means sense control. This is very important. Because we have these different senses. We have the five perceptive senses and the five active senses. And perceptive senses means like the taste, the tongue, the ears, the eyes, the nose, and the touch. And these senses right now are pulling us to do different things. Instead of us using them to serve Krishna, they are using us to serve Maya. That's called Godas. Just like someone who controls the senses is called Goswami. But someone who is controlled by the senses is called Godas. So it's important to be Dhamma, controlled or tame. Actually, the direct meaning of that word is tame, like an animal. We have to tame our senses. If you've ever been to a circus, you see how they tame the lion. They flick a whip in front of the lion. Get down! Get down! Anyone seen this in a circus? No one's been to a circus? You've been to a circus. They don't have lions here, do they? No, not Fiji. But I've been to big circuses, three rings. And the trainer's going, whack, whack. Get down. And the lion sits down. Please accept my obeisances, master. But it has to be whipped first. He doesn't actually hit him with the whip, he snaps it. That's because he hit him with the whip, the lion would get angry. So he threatens him. Like that. And so the senses require to be tamed like that. Or like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the guru of Srila Prabhupada, stated that in the morning we hit our mind with the shoes and the cane, and in the evening we do the similar thing. In other words, we tame. Not that you literally have to do that. We don't want anyone hitting their heads with shoes. They can use their own shoes, not someone else's shoes. So, maybe the guru's shoes. I was just reading that, and then many parts of the world, if you throw a shoe at someone, it's considered an insult. That just happened in Iran to the president of Iraq. Someone threw a shoe at him. So, anyway, apart from that, so, dhamma, tapa. And one must cultivate tapa, or austerity. What do we mean by that? You accept things favorable for Krishna and reject things unfavorable. You don't have to be very austere like Dhruva Maharaj, breathing only every 12 days or every month or something like that. You can eat nice prasadam and everything, but don't accept anything that will hurt your Krishna consciousness, and you accept things that help your Krishna consciousness. So that's tapa. Samadhamat tapa. Shocham, and cleanliness is very important. Even in the Western world, they said cleanliness is next to godliness. So Prabhupada also said that Brahman means shuchi. Shuchi means clean, means bathing. At least 2-3 times a day. 3 preferable, but people are working, it may not be practical. Bathing regularly, wearing clean cloth, cleaning your hands before eating, cleaning your hands after eating. These are all very important principles, not only for spiritual life, but even for health. Srila Prabhupada said one of the causes of disease is uncleanliness. And that's actually one of the principles of religion. Cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. So cleanliness is a very important principle. And internal cleanliness too. By always remembering Krishna. Yakshmaret pundarikaksham savaya avyantara shuchi. Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. Like you all chanted before the purification, or during the purification. So, shocham. And then tolerance, shantir, tolerance, honesty. Honesty is very important. You tell the truth. Religiosity. And then, apart from that, reading or hearing regularly Krishna Katha, that's jnana, and applying what you've read or applying what you've heard. This knowledge is not simply meant for some intellectual satisfaction. This knowledge is meant for application. You read something in the Gita. Where Krishna says, I was just reading the sixth chapter of the Gita right before this started. Where Krishna says we can control the mind by constant practice and detachment. So that means we should constantly practice and be detached. This knowledge is meant for us to apply in our lives. And when you apply it, that's called vijnana. Jnana vijnana astikam. Brahma karma svabhavajam. So these are the qualities, the motive goodness qualities, that must be cultivated in order to properly chant the Gayatri Mantra. The Gayatri Mantra simply cannot be appreciated unless one actually develops these qualities. And the more you chant with those qualities, the more the qualities will manifest themselves, motive goodness qualities. So that's the second initiation. And the Gayatri Mantra brings you closer to Krishna and allows you to do deity worship. Another point is, the purpose of the devotees taking Gayatri initiation is so they can do deity worship. It's a benediction. They get to dress the form of the Lord, do arti for the form of the Lord, perform intimate seva, cook for the Lord, offer bhoga to the Supreme Personality of God. It's simply wonderful. But one must be, like Prabhupada said, as far as being a Brahman, one must be Brahman to approach Brahman. One must be a Brahman to approach Brahman. Because the real meaning of the word Brahman is one who knows Brahman. And if you don't know Brahman, of course the Supreme Brahman, Vedanti Tatva Vidas Tatvam Yad Jnanam Advayam, Ramaiti, Paramatmaiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate. If you don't know Krishna as the ultimate Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate aspect of Brahman, the Bhagavan, is Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. If you don't know that, you don't know Brahman. You're not a Brahman. Brahman means to know Brahman. Spirit. Brahman means spirit. It's a generic word for spirit. So therefore, that's what a Brahman is. Not simply one who has a thread, not simply one who was born in a Brahman family, not simply one who has taken initiation. Taking initiation doesn't make one a disciple. It's when one submits to the discipline. That makes one a disciple. Because the word disciple comes from the word discipline. Just like the word shisha, which is the Sanskrit for disciple, comes from the root word shash, which means discipline. But we have other words connected like shastra, shisha. Of course, shastra is like this. This is a shastra. And shastra is when one doesn't follow shastra, that means a stick. You know, one gets punished, in other words. So we follow shastra so we don't get shastra. And therefore, we're shishas. Everyone understands that? I'll say it again. We follow shastra, which also includes the words of Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master. We follow shastra, so we're not going to be subjected to shastra or punishment. And that's what it means to be a shisha. Okay? So those who are taking initiation today are making these promises, as I mentioned before, in front of Krishna. So it's very serious. And you're vowing, promising to follow this for the rest of this life. And the spiritual master, happens to be myself in this particular regard, is promising to take the disciple back to Godhead if the disciple follows strictly Krishna consciousness. That means if you follow strictly for this whole life, you will go back to Godhead. That is Prabhupada's promise. I'm absolutely sure of that. If you follow strictly. Some devotees say, is that all we have to do? But who actually is able to follow strictly their whole life? It takes a lot of determination, enthusiasm, patience, utsahan nischaya daryat. Then it is guaranteed. We can give you a written guarantee that you will go back to Godhead if you follow strictly all the things I mentioned chanting four regulated principles, and you serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said that anyone who thinks he is Krishna conscious outside of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that is the mission of ISKCON, then he is living an hallucination. In other words, he's believing in something that's not real. That's hallucination. Hallucination means you see a ghost, you see something that doesn't exist. So we don't want to live an hallucination. Okay? So this is very serious promises. Very, very, very serious promises. Of course, truthfulness is another quality that's the leg of religion. One of the four legs of religion, which we mentioned before. Okay, with that in mind, we're going to be giving the names to the new disciples. They get their beads. So what the procedure is, that each and every new disciple should go and offer respects. Actually, you can offer respects to the Srila Tamal Krishnamars, the Prabhupada, the deities, and then my humble, or not so humble self. And then we'll ask you, what are the regulative principles, and how many rounds do you chant every day? I encourage devotees.